9:00 p.m. to 11:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The show such as The Orion Event, Road Talk Radio, The Hollywood Connection, Just Short and Crazy, Knowledge from Behind the Veil, Nightmares Radio, Awakening the Unknown, The Warren Tucker, and the cooperative show Night Visions. And now for your featured show.
Good evening. It is 7:02 Central Time on June 14th, 2018. It's another episode of Night Moves Radio. Tonight, we hope to speak with Brian K. Morris. I did remind him this morning during his Never Mind the Furthermore, which was on about 9 o'clock my time. I think it was 10 o'clock his time. Before he comes on here, we can talk about our trip to Metropolis last Saturday with Ian Boothby of the Hollywood Connections. It was fun going down there. We met my old friend from camp, Colin, who I hadn't seen in like 20 years, maybe 22 years. And we had lunch with him and his wife. And then as we were sitting there, it started to brew up a storm. Mm-hmm. And from there, Josh had to drive in between lots of rain.
We had to walk in between lots of rain, too.
Well, yeah. Well, once we got to Metropolis, we didn't walk from Salem to Metropolis.
Well, no, but I'm just saying when we got to Metropolis.
But when we got to Metropolis, it was pouring down rain. Stuff was getting covered by tents and stuff. We didn't get to see the Batmobile because they covered it. It must have been worth some money. As we got there, we sought some shelter. And believe it or not, the building we went into had Kathy Jackson and her husband. And there was a fellow there that Ian had interviewed on his show that he saw there, too. So we talked to them for a while. Mm-hmm. And then we stayed dry and it quit raining there. And then we went on to going to the Superman Museum. No, wait. When we went on to see Brian K. Morris, then we went to the Superman Museum. Okay, so we found Brian K. Morris, and then I saw Amy Hale and her husband there, and then we saw Charles Masson and
Philo Barnhart,
and said hi to Philo, and so we saw a lot of our friends there. We saw Kenny walking through, but he never saw me. And then we also met Daryl Shaw, and then we went on to the Superman Museum where we took some photos and had a lot of fun. And then we decided, hey, let's go to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So then we went to Kentucky and had dinner and went to Books A Million because we never can't have a trip without finding some bookstore.
Yeah,
that's kind of
Books A Million was a good bookstore.
Yeah, it was a pretty neat store. I'd go back again, but I wouldn't go back to
the Shake and Shake. The Steak and Shake. Yeah. Oh, Lord.
They made us. We were there for 2 hours.
Terrible service.
And
then Ian Ian's burger was practically shoe leather.
Yeah, I felt really bad for him. They didn't make him pay for it, though. They did take it off his receipt. I had a... I don't remember what I had.
Mine was pretty good, though. The prime steak burger.
No, I think I had a turkey sandwich. I don't know. What did I have? I don't remember.
You had some kind of sandwich.
I don't remember what I had. I remember the shake I had. It was a chocolate strawberry dipped strawberry.
Yeah.
It was a kid size because I can't drink those great big ones.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had a lot of fun. I think the trip back was kind of fun because
Josh
and Ian had a lot of conversations. And then Ian and I sang to some Spice Girl songs, which really made Josh happy. That was fun. How many males do you know that can sing with another, you know, like Spice Girls? We're like hoping one day we totally will go to a concert and Josh can come along, right?
I'll be staying home.
Well, darn. Anyway, looks like we got Brian K. Morris on the other line. So how about we go ahead and let him come in on our banter? Okay. Good evening, Brian K. Morris.
Good evening, Ariana. And Josh, how the heck are you guys?
Pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
We're good. We're just, you know, chilling out. Today is my Friday, but it is not Josh's Friday. He's still got some days to go yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm listening to you guys just now post-Superman celebration, and it, you know, your trouble with remembering events. I have a great deal of that every year following the celebration. It's just, I tell myself I go down there to have fun. I go down there to relax, and then I get so busy that my brain just goes into vapor lock after a certain point. So I fully feel your pain as far as the memory gaps.
Yeah. So. Pretty bad. I mean, I guess it wasn't that important when I had to eat a steak and shake. I mean, what was important is that I saw my friends and Josh got to see the Superman Museum. I mean, you know, if it wasn't raining, it would have been really awesome. And, you know,
yeah.
You know, maybe if it's not raining, we could always try the trip again next year. I don't know. It was fun.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I think we had fun, like, on the car ride coming back. I think that was the funnest, except for Josh having to listen to Ian and I sing the Spice Girls.
Josh, I take it you're not a big Spice Girls fan. Like that. Tell me what you want. What you really want.
Well, see, my sister used to listen to that music all the time when she was growing up, and it drove me absolutely up the wall, and I just never got into it.
I was a huge fan of the Spice Girls. Oh, my God. My junior year, because they used to have this lip sync contest, and it was known fact the seniors win every time. Well, that year, the seniors did not win. I lip sync to one of the Spice Girls songs. I think it was the song, Who Do You Think You Are? I'm trying to remember. And I dressed kind of like Baby Spice. I had my hair in pigtails, a black spaghetti dress with Spice Girls written in glow-in-the-dark stars on my dress, and I had a sporty Spice-like jacket, and I started to dance, and then I sang, I unzipped the jacket, and I threw it out to the audience, and yeah, that was fun, and I got first place.
Well, there you go, girl power. You go.
Yeah, that was probably the wildest any of those teachers had ever seen me, because aside from being in plays, that was the wildest any of them had ever seen me. It was funny.
You're totally out of control.
Yeah. And my dad had to repaint us a few years later, but while I was in high school, before I moved out, I took with markers and some markers that, you know, Dad was able to paint over, and drew a big cartoon caricature of all the Spice Girls on my bedroom wall.
I admire that kind of devotion. I really do. Actually, Spice World, I think it's a hilarious movie.
It is. It's a funny movie. It's great.
And Josh is probably looking around the room right now and going, am I the only one
who's sane? Yeah, exactly.
I was so addicted to those. It was ridiculous. I had an old VHS of them. I have a baby doll Spice Barbie that's never been opened. I watched all of their videos. I danced all their videos. I sang all their songs. It was freaking ridiculous.
No, I think you had the proper values in life, dear. I fully applaud it. You know, just when you think you're starting to despair for the next generation, somebody like you comes along and reaffirms one's faith in humanity.
You know, and I still turned out okay despite my huge obsession with the Spice Girls. So.
No, you turned out okay because of your huge obsession.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Josh is like, I have no friends in this universe. The PTSD is strong with this one.
Occasionally, like, he'll let me play them when he's around, but I try not to play them too much because I don't want to, you know, really annoy him.
I never said it annoys
me. I know, but it's funny.
Oh.
Yeah, but it was...
I understand. It took me a while to get into the Spice Girls, frankly. I mean, it took me about 4 or 5 tries to get through Wannabe, and then I actually sat through and listen to it, and I'm like, you know, this isn't half bad.
You know? Well,
I watched the movie and enjoyed the heck out of it. I saw one of the concerts on TV, and I'm like, you know, these gals have some legitimate talent.
Yeah, they had some great personality.
I grew up with the Monkees, so I know all about the manufacturing. They just happen to have genuine talent behind it.
Hey, so, we're the Monkees!
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hey, I still like some of the old groups. You know, I'm still into the Beatles, you know, even though they're not around anymore.
We got half of them.
Yeah. We enjoyed seeing you at the...
Ringo can still play, man. Ringo is
so
awesome.
Yeah, Ringo's pretty good. I actually have 2 t-shirts that I have with the Beatles on it. And on our way to Metropolis, we stopped in Vandalia, and there was a gas station...
Yeah.
That sold clothes. I've never seen a gas station that sells clothes. And I bought a Beatles tank top there for like $10. I was like, all right, this is kind of cool. So then if someone asks me, hey, I like your shirt, where'd you get it? And I can just say, the gas station.
Well, there you go. Well, I know that on the I used to live in Champaign, Illinois, so I'd go down I-57 on the way to Metropolis. And a couple of years ago, we stopped in one town, and the name of it is, you know, leaking out my ears right now. But it turned out that George Harrison's sister was living there at the time. She had married somebody with an oil company, and somehow they wound up in southern Illinois.
Wow.
And George happened to visit just prior to the Beatles' appearance on the classic appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. And there's a museum down there that has put together a replica of the radio station circa 1963 where George showed up with a copy of Please, Please Me.
Oh, wow.
And supposedly that was the first airplay it got in the United States. Plus, legend has it that he sat in with several local bands over the course of the week he was there. And when you drive down there, there is this big picture of George Harrison that is very visible to the southbound lane, and people are probably driving by and going, what in the world is that there for? But you have to stop inside the museum there, and it's quite interesting. The county, and again, I, you know, Brian's been up all day riding, so he's challenged right now. It's a fascinating museum.
Cool.
It's like a crime museum. They have a big thing about the guy who actually managed to keep Capone out of southern Illinois because he was 10 times the son of a gun Capone could ever hope to be. And they actually had to construct a gallows for him because this guy had committed a number of murders. But they had changed the laws in Illinois about how one could be executed. They had moved on to the electric chair. Well, under the law, they had to still hang this guy, so they built a scaffold that's still there.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting.
The more you know.
Yeah. Sometimes it gets kind of scary, the more you know.
Well, yeah, but considering some of the people that the three of us hang around, it's hard,
of course. Come on. Oh, jeez. Oh, y'all aren't half bad. You're all right.
Well, so are you guys. I love the heck out of you.
Well, thanks. We love you, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I said it was cool seeing you at SoCon. I think the most one I was not SoCon. Jesus. Metropolis, SupermanCon.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, the one that I was surprised to see was Kathy Jackson. She's like the least one I expected to see, because when I turned around the corner and walked in that building, I was like, there's Kathy Jackson. And I was like, Kathy, like, I didn't know you were going to be here. And she said it was like a last minute thing. So it was kind of cool running into her. So that was neat.
That's part of the fun for me going to the Superman celebration. I mean, every year I run into somebody I have not seen in, you know, like millennia, it seems. Well, in fact, this time, two of the guests of honor on the comic side, Michael Urey and Dan Peretti. Michael is a former editor of DC Comics and Kumiko and Dark Horse, who is the editor of Back Issue Magazine, who I've written for. And Dan Peretti has written a wonderful scholarly work on the folklore of the Superman legend and how it influences his fans and vice versa. Brilliant, brilliant book that I'm just starting to read.
Very cool.
Anyway, I haven't seen Michael in 10 years, and I haven't seen Dan in probably a good 6 or 7.
Wow.
Michael lives on the East Coast, and Dan lives in southern Indiana. And now he's moving to Newfoundland for his job. You know, it's a big step up for him. I'm very proud of him. But yeah, it's like I said, I see people at the celebration. There's usually a bunch of people that I haven't seen in ages. I had some friends from Australia come in.
Wow.
That I hadn't seen in 5 years. So, yeah, that's part of the joy of the Superman celebration, plus the idea that there are people that you will see every year.
Mm-hmm.
They show up like clockwork. And
that's
quite reassuring. It's like a little reunion down there every year, and there's just never enough time to see everyone.
Oh, yeah.
So I just sit behind my little table and make them all come to me.
It's a nice place to visit, but I honestly don't think I could do the con myself, because isn't it like 3 or 4 days?
Oh, yeah.
That's a long time.
The actual Superman celebration goes from Thursday at 5 o'clock to Sunday around 4 or 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Where I was located is like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, there's a number of conventions around the country where it's 3 days and some are even longer.
Oh, my.
I just bring plenty of water, make sure I can take bathroom breaks every 10 minutes, and, you know, I'm there for the long haul. So.
Yeah, I'd be a total mess.
Work up the muscles for it.
I'm like one of those people, like, I love people, don't get me wrong, but, like, you know, after a while, I get kind of peopled out. It's like an introvert thing. So, like, you know, I think after, you know, 2 days of conventions, you know, my max. And after that, like, I'm like, okay, I need to go home and, like, tell everybody to leave me alone and I'll see you in a day.
I feel your pain completely. Being a writer like you, it's a mostly solitary occupation. And something like Superman Celebration or some of the more intense conventions that I do attend can get to after a while. And I've been telling people that on Saturday, I had just seen so many people that my brain achieved a state of vapor lock.
Yeah.
And I got this kind of weird aphasia where I'm talking to one of my friends who I've known for years. He's a really good guy. I love him and his family. And I'm autographing a book for him. And for the life of me, I cannot remember his name. And then I turn to his wife and can't remember hers. And I'm looking around at my wife and then thinking of myself and realizing I don't remember anyone's name, including my own. And meanwhile, my friend Chris, who is still taking pot shots at me because of it, he thinks I'm joking. I have to say, I'm of the age now where that sort of thing is quite troubling.
Yeah.
Dear, call the ambulance. We're going to the home now. We won't put up a fight. And everybody's like, laughing, having a good time. And I'm sitting here quietly, except Cookie. She's looking, going, not me. and I'm sitting here having like a mega panic attack and trying not to like break into tears or anything.
Aww.
We got it sorted out. But we got it sorted out.
Yeah. Well, I know we probably need to move on a little. I know Josh wanted to talk to you a little bit about Skyman while we still have some time left. You wanted to talk to him about Skyman, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to hand over to Josh and let him talk to you about Skyman, okay?
I'll talk to you guys about anything you want.
All right.
You can't stump me.
So recently I finished Skyman versus the Master of Steam. Absolutely excellent, wonderful pulp feel, and like it just felt like just totally transported to the 30s, 40s, and I was just wondering, apparently it seems that the villain, the Master of Steam, was a creation of your own making. He didn't come from the original comics of Skyman, did he?
No, he did not. And thank you so much for the compliments, Josh. That means a lot to me. The Master of Steam was my own creation. When Ron Franz, who owns the character of Skyman, gave me permission to play with the characters, I did a lot of research into Skyman's past and realized he didn't really encounter anyone that you might consider a super-powered character, pretty much. Mm. And he certainly never had any recurring villains. Even Doc Savage only had one recurring villain, and that was only in two of his adventures, John Sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
But Skyman was, if you don't count Adolf Hitler, I think he encountered Hitler more than once. But other than Hitler, who was in like every comic back then, Skyman had nobody coming back after him. And one of my goals with working with Skyman was to create almost like a rogues gallery. Plus, I wanted somebody who was just, I would say more powerful than Skyman in terms of experience and physicality. And, I left it open. The Master of Steam could return. There's every possibility of it. So,
yeah, you left that. You left that.
That was my goal in it, yeah.
You kind of left that open at the ending of the book. I won't give away anything, but you kind of left that open a little bit. In a way, I mean, a person could look at it both ways. A person can look at it for as he's done for, and a person can look at it as, oh, he just might be coming back,
Yeah, and that's how I intended to write it, in that should I not come up with another storyline for the Master of Steam, we have brought him to a satisfying conclusion. But then again, like you said, the door is still open, and we could bring him back. That's the one thing I liked about a lot of villains from comics, in that you can see them plunging off the bridge, or the airplane they're in blows up or whatever. But the writer will bring them back somehow. They'll just get to the point eventually, like the Joker. Batman doesn't even ask, "How did you escape that death trap?" Okay, he's back. What else?
Well, one thing I liked about the Master of Steam is that I don't know if you intended this at all, but he kind of reminded me of Darth Vader from Star Wars, because you've got the whole, I mean, you've got the breathing apparatus armor suit thing. And I mean, I guess he's not as ruthless as Darth Vader is, because I mean, it doesn't seem like from what I read, like his underlings were like clenching in fear and freezing up every time he passes, like Darth Vader's underlings do in the films and in the books and stuff like that, worrying if he's gonna choke him to death. There wasn't that sense of fear, but he was still a very he seems very Vader-esque in how he is, and that I really like that.
Well, I'm glad you did enjoy it. I admit that I did keep Vader in the back of my mind. I was thinking of the Master of Steam as kind of like an amount of various 40s movie serial mustache twirling, gloating over the good guy villains, as well as I was kind of thinking, like, what if there was a World War II version of Tony Stark gone bad?
Ah, yeah, I can see that.
I was kind of turning that little that notion on its ear to a degree. And I also, I'm like you. I it's like in the Star Wars film, everybody is just like terrified of Vader for good reason. Mm. And you have characters in comics like Doctor Doom, or practically any major villain way back when, and all of the henchmen are like, oh, what if he turns on us? Oh, I better do what he says, or he'll kill me too. And in this book, I wanted the Master of Steam surrounded by some unsavory types that were, in their own way, just as nasty as he could be. And in fact, in some ways, I think the Master of Steam is a little more sympathetic, because he's working basically for a higher ideal, whereas the people he surrounds himself with are basically just in for the buck. So that was kind of what I had in mind when I was writing that.
Yeah, because his underlings, I mean, if it seems like they're the type that they're not so afraid, and if they really got, if the Master of Steam was too overbearing with them, they'd come out with a few words against him as well, and not be afraid to put him in his place a little bit. At least that's how it came out to me, anyway.
Yes, that's kind of how I was hoping it would come out. Thank you. And I also wanted the idea that the villains didn't so much fear him as they respected him in an odd sort of way, sort of an honor among thieves kind of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That they respected what he could do. They respected his power. Of course, yes, they were motivated by money, of course, in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have like this blind, unreasoning terror that so many of the nameless henchmen of film, TV, and other literature frequently had for the big boss.
Mm-hmm.
They were total creeps on their own. So
yeah,
kind of almost a mutual admiration society, I would say.
Now, Skyman versus the Master of Steam is an origin story, correct? It's supposed to be how Skyman becomes Skyman, right? I mean, it takes place before the comics do, right?
Yes. Yes, I kind of think of it as Big Shot Comics number zero.
Mm.
The actual origin of Skyman really took about two pages in the original comic book. In fact, it was Skyman number one. But there were a lot of areas where we could fill in why, like, how did he meet Vaughn Carroll? How did he create the Stasismatic gun? How did he create the wing? So a lot of what you see as far as the origin is of my own creation. However, it is kind of wrapped around what Gardner Fox and Ogden Whitney originally produced way back in the 40s.
Mm.
And also we incorporate some elements from a comic that Lon Franz did in the mid-1980s, about 1986 or so, called Return of the Skyman, in which they put in different elements. I just, tried to incorporate both stories and then try to put my own twisted logic to it and hopefully a few entertaining words here and there, so...
Mm-hmm. And you do a riveting job of it. I was riveted through the entire book. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Josh. I genuinely appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And I was also wondering, are there going to be any Skyman projects in the near future for you?
Oh. If you like Skyman, it's a good time to be alive. One of the things, I'm now on a writing schedule. My wife Cookie has told me that you are now to schedule your writing and you get these projects in order. And right now she is imitating cracking a whip, which she does well, almost too well. But during the latter part of this year, I will be writing the sequel to the first book of Skyman, which will pretty much take him up to Big Shot Comics number one, where, it is basically the master's theme is Skyman's first day on the job, whereas this is going to be he's been around for a while. I'm also planning some comic books to come out in 2018. With Skyman and also other characters from the Ace universe, such as the Phase. What else? I'm also hoping to finish up a project next year that we're calling Skyman Adventure Magazine, which will be a pulp replica. It will look as if we had published that thing in 1943 or whatever.
Wow.
And I've got it started, and that's just one of the numerous projects I've got on my plate for the next few years. So,
sounds very exciting. I look forward to it, and probably you'll be purchasing all of them.
Well, I know.
I think if you're any sort of right-thinking American, you should.
Whenever you get Bachelor's Grove done with the one with Ron Fitzgerald in it, I'm purchasing a copy of that with your signature, so I don't have to pay the extra $20.
There you go. There you go. For those of you listening to this wonderful, wonderful podcast, I started a scam. I mean a business plan where, unlike many of the celebrities you see at the conventions near your home, who charge for, like, photographs and for pictures or breathing the same air, I made it clear that I would not charge for my autograph. However, if you did not want it, that would be an extra $20. And yes, I have had someone take me up on it.
Oh, man.
Just to let you know, Ariana, my part's pretty much done since I wrote it. But the next three issues of the Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove from Silver Phoenix Entertainment are being assembled right now, and I have seen the artwork for the Ron Fitzgerald stories, and it is mind-blowing.
Awesome.
It is great stuff. And we are working with a gentleman who at one point worked with Marvel Comics back in the 90s, a man named Robert Brown. Very, very talented artist. And Ron is being well-served by the visuals, I will say that.
Very cool.
Mm.
Yeah, I probably don't think I will see Ron tell Dark History and Horror because I don't know for sure if he will be at Spook Show or not. So,
yeah, I don't know either. I will have to ask him.
Well, sometimes
I hope he'll be there because he's got a lot of fans in downstate Illinois.
Yeah,
and over here in Indiana,
yeah.
He's a great guy and a terrific illusionist.
He is.
I hope I see him before Dark History, too.
Yeah, I'd like to, too. Only thing, I remember the last time I asked him where he was going, I don't think he knew, because he has someone else kind of schedules his trips for him.
Well, yeah, he's a busy guy. You know, he's got to keep track of all the dark, sticky fun he's up to.
Yeah.
So, plus, he's doing movies and such. Ron is probably busier than I am, Lord help him.
So, yeah.
If he doesn't know where he's supposed to be at any given moment, I cut him some slack. Because there are times I don't know where I'm going next. I do now, but... But yeah, Ron's very busy. But I'll tell your audience that if you ever get a chance to see Master Ron Fitzgerald, they should definitely make a point of doing so, because he's an incredible illusionist, and he's a fun guy too.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun to talk to, and I still think it's fun to watch him eat those razors, and all the people watch in amazement as he pulls them back out. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I think so too. And Ron is one of those guys, as you know, you two already know, that you get Ron and myself together, and it's vaudeville night.
Oh, boy.
My IQs plummet. And it's something that we don't go PG-13, unfortunately.
No.
Either, so
if we've got...
hard people to listen.
The thing, when we've got you and Ron and Charles...
Oh, Charles!
Oh,
just makes...
my God! That
it's chaos.
That is just a chaotic group. It's freaking hilarious, and I'll always love you guys because you guys will chase me down the mall when there's no Wi-Fi signal, and I really appreciated that.
that was definitely a day to remember. Trying to place my entire body onto a 1x1 square of linoleum. Praying desperately for Wi-Fi signal, and to your audience, let's just say I'm a little extra manly, if you know what I mean. I came with both of my shoes onto that little real estate, so that was kind of fun. That was almost like we should have been filming that.
I know.
A comedy of errors.
We really should have.
Trying to track the elusive Wi-Fi signal at the mall. So.
At least I know that mall, there's no Wi-Fi signal, so the best that I can do is record something, then upload it later. That's probably, if I do anything, that's what I'll do.
I'm grateful that you've come to this conclusion. I don't know if I could take another wind sprint up and down the mall. Thank you very much for your poor planning there.
Well, I had no idea it was that bad, quite honestly, you know, so that's, I didn't know. At least I know now.
Well, yeah, and what amazed me was the fact that we started basically at one end of the mall and we're basically at the opposite end of the mall. And I'm not talking about the short end of the mall. We're talking about the long, long enough for an airplane to take off distance from the mall. And, that was quite challenging. I just look up one day and it's like, I can't even see where we started because of the curvature of the earth. So, that was a fun day. I honestly, I did have a good time. It was hilarious. And none of us knew what was going on, which made it even more exciting.
No, and sadly, I still remember what Charles was trying to do with his sub sandwich.
Oh, Lord, don't talk about that.
I will never.
Yeah,
I'm not going to.
Like a little mystery for your listeners.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just saying he left a nice little image in my mind that is forever burnt there.
I can understand that. Charles is probably they ought to put his table like in front of those Build-A-Bear places.
Oh my God!
Pointing at teddy bears. Lives having been traumatized by this poor man. You know, there's a reason we call him the craziest man in comics.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Again, like I said, I'm forever grateful for you guys to do that because, you know, good friends, you know, they definitely go the distance, and that's what you guys did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was at least 3/4 of a mile. It wasn't in a straight line either.
Yeah. We're down to like 5 minutes. Is there anything that you want to tell our audience or our listeners that you got going on or where to find you online, Mr. Morris?
Well, it just so happens I'm ready. I will be appearing at PWACCon. That's P T-W-H-A-C-K. That's the sound of your junk getting punched, I'm told. That's going to be July 7th and 8th at Lawrenceville High School in Lawrenceville, Illinois. There is a PlaqueCon page on Facebook, and I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to have Santiago Cirillo there. I will be there. A whole bunch of our friends will be appearing there. But and also, with any luck, my brand new comic book, The Ghostly Tales of Spencer Spook, should be ready by then, and we will premiere it at the convention. Also, I can be found at risingtide.pub. Don't forget that .pub at the end. Plus, currently, I'm starting work on the second book in my Volcana series, the Prometheus cover-up, and this fall, as promised, I will be working on the sequel to the first Skyman book. So I'm working on a script currently that we're hoping to get published for Free Comic Book Day next May. So
cool.
I lack not for things to do.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on our show once again, Brian. We always love talking to you.
Well, I love talking to you too also. Thank you so much for inviting me. And however soon we can see each other will not be soon enough.
That is for sure.
Yeah.
We'll see you later, Brian.
Bye.
Night.
Good night. All right. That was Mr. Brian K. Morris, our author friend who lives in Indiana. Next week, we will be having Tabitha Bomander. She is someone that we hope to have one of her novels out from Cherry House Press. So she will be calling in. And speaking of Cherry House Press, be sure to buy your copy of our first anthology, The Fears of Us All. It is on Amazon for $11.99. If you have Prime, I think it is free shipping. And if you purchase a copy, you will be supporting our Author's Dream Fund, which is where we help all the little men, you know, of the writing and publishing world get their books out there and get their stories heard so that they have their chance to inspire others. Because we know how hard it is to get published. So we're helping all those people who have been told, like, no 1 million times. So that is the whole purpose behind Cherry House Press. And that we'll be back next Thursday at 7 o'clock Central. 8 o'clock Eastern with Tabitha Bomander. And on the 28th, we will not be here. It's my birthday, taking the night off. I don't know if there's not going to be a show or if they will be having something else in our place. More details will come in the future very soon. So until then, everybody have a good evening.
Good night.
Good night.
At this time, the Riff Network would like to recognize its sponsors. The Insurance Doctor, looking to save you 30% or more on your insurance needs. Divine Magic and Novelties. Glassworks Gallery, Sperryville, Virginia, for all of your glasswork needs. The Skeleton Key, you've always had the key. And Awakening Spirit Fun Productions.